Make a decision to be the best. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Your work reflects you, so protect your reputation. Don't ever give up. HVAC. Tactical. It's a mindset.
Welcome, everybody, to the HVAC Tactical Podcast. I'm here with Josh Campbell of Rescue Air out of Richardson, Texas. Welcome, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on.
So I was kind of giving you a rundown of, you know, what we do and what the whole purpose of the show and everything that we want to bring. And it's really just bringing that positive impact where we can change the mindset of people and help them be more successful in the trade or in the industry. So basically, man, I just want people to hear your story, you know, and where you come from, you know, where you're from, how you got started in the trade. And to where you're at right now.
Yeah. So, my name's Josh Campbell. I'm a fourth generation mechanical contractor. If you can even imagine, there were four generations ago. We were talking about when mechanical contractors even started the other day. It's kind of funny. Looking at my great granddad to myself, my dad to myself. When I was a little kid, there's clippings of me in the newspaper. A new generation of Campbells entering the mechanical field.
Nice.
You know,
nice.
I was like 8 years old, and on, you know, with a screwdriver in my hand working on a meter. So, So I grew up in the mountains of Virginia, up in the Shenandoah Valley, and that's where all our family still is. Grew up with a pipe wrench in my hand. So we didn't have a lot of air conditioning, but we did tons of mechanical work. And I worked for my granddad and then went to work for my dad. Before I went off to heating and air conditioning school, and I went to a Lincoln Tech heating and air conditioning school from in 1998. And after I got out of there, I went to college, continued working for my dad while I was in college for business. And then.
So did you end up getting a business degree then?
I actually left college while working for my dad in true fashion, the same way he left his dad, you know. Oh, man, you know, I went out in a blaze of glory. My dad, one day, he was leaving for work, and I remember he said, he's like, we're pulling out of the driveway at 7, and I was living at home and going to college because I was only about 20 miles from James Madison, and I walked out the door at 7 a.m., and he was pulling out the driveway, and he left me, and I was like, no. It's like, and I got so mad. I drove to a Lowe's, bought a trailer, loaded all my tools up, loaded up all my stuff, and I moved to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, stopped going to college, and started a heating and air conditioning company. I went to an auction.
Just like that.
Bought a couple old Verizon vans, and talked to one of my buddies in college to come in to help me start this company. And that company's still running. Jeremy, if you're listening, Jeremy, what's up, man? J&J Air out of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Got a beautiful little business down there.
Myrtle Beach is great.
Yeah.
Place to have a business.
It's a little seasonal.
Okay.
But outside of that challenge, it's a great place. So
So you went to school, finished school.
That's right.
You're actually the first person I've ever met who's fourth generation, because I'm third generation. So I usually get other people who are second generation, only a couple that I've met who are third generation. So it's pretty cool that you're fourth generation. So...
There's a cat out of San Antonio you should look up, and he works for a business. Been around. They're the oldest heating and air conditioning company. It was just a heating company, and they're from, San Antonio. What's that gentleman's name? I'll think of it and get back to you on it. But they used to install, like, the original gas lines for the city that ran the gas lamps on the streets back in the, we're talking, like, 1880.
Yeah, it'd be 1800s with gas-powered gas lamps, for sure.
Oh, yeah, it was really neat stuff, but, yeah.
So did you build up that company in Myrtle Beach and then you sold it?
So yeah, this is where life took a spin on me. This was in early 2001, and in late 2001 the plane hit the Pentagon, and I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I had to do something, and I got a call from a large electrical contractor, and I was master electrical and master mechanical at that time. I actually got both of my journeyman licenses when I was 19.
Oh, wow.
So I was very young when I got those, and then got my master's licenses when I was 21, and they recruited me to come help rebuild the Pentagon. So I left that company to go do that, and I never returned. And then after a year of working at the Pentagon, staring at blueprints, hating that government side of life, I got out and started my own heating and air conditioning company then. And
at least you got Davis Bacon wages, right?
Yeah, it was. I'd tell you what, man. Whew. You want to? That year was. It felt like 10. You know, sitting.
I can imagine.
Fluorescent lights. Ugh,
as a kid, doing big kind of commercial jobs for like the. I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, so. Right. Doing big commercial jobs like for the city of Tucson, mm-hmm. And like their courthouse and, you know, the downtown buildings and stuff, and assembling this, you know, huge ductwork for these big chiller air handlers and all kinds of stuff. I don't miss that at all.
No,
that was probably one of the worst things of my childhood that I remember just hating life every day going back to those jobs.
So, yeah. I started doing decommissioning of the 2A1 basement. That was the segment. So it's there's five rings around the Pentagon, and then there's layers to each of it's the Pentagon, obviously. And then the 2A1 basement, I believe it was two floors down, segment A, ring A, and we were taking out old asbestos boiler piping and stuff to as part of the renovation, was just tied right into the reconstruction. So that's what I was doing. It was cold, dark basement of the Pentagon for a year of my life.
Jeez.
And then I said, enough of this, man. Actually, when I left, I started my second company, Campbell Mechanical, which I ran for a decade in Northern Virginia, D.C., and in Maryland. And before I started that company, I remember being so burnt out that I took it was probably 10 days or 2 weeks to myself. Spent a lot of time on a hammock. I mean, literally couldn't get myself recharged. I was so drained from that job. I was used to working outside, man. You know, I'm a professional shovel operator. I'm an electrician. I like to do stuff with my hands. I wasn't getting to do that there. So very excited to get back into running my own business.
Very cool. So you ran 10 years out of that. You shut that down, took some time off.
Yeah.
And now you're here in Dallas area.
That's right. Yeah, I started that one. Everything's been started from scratch. That one I started, ran it. I just went around to job sites to see buildings going up, and I just go talk to whoever was building the building. I said, I don't know who's doing your air conditioning, but can I give it a go? And I just meet like the project manager. If I saw like an addition going onto a house, I'd stop and start talking to the builder. And
how you do it.
They were like, dude, I'll give you a shot. And I'd say, just give me an opportunity to bid the job. You know, if you're not happy with who you're using, or had some cards printed up.
So when was this? What year was this?
That was in 02.
Here in Dallas?
That was, no, 2002. This is in Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I ran that company for a decade. I ran it all the wrong way, you know, and that's where I was in a pretty dark little spot. I couldn't get out of bed, didn't want to go to my office, didn't want to do what I was doing. I hated my life. I literally hated my life. And people thought that I was a lot happier than I was because I had money. But I was really depressed at the time. And I shut down that company.
What was it specifically? And if you don't want to get into it, then that's fine. Yeah. But what was it specifically that you were unhappy with? Was it the trade? Was it the career?
I was grinding. I didn't know what I was doing. I never took the time to educate myself about continuing education was gone for me. You know, I'd go get more licensing and stuff like that, but not actually learning how to run a business, especially not in the trades. So I didn't really know what I was doing, and I was doing it all myself, and I didn't delegate, and I had no understanding of scalability or how to grow this thing. So as my business kept growing, I just kept doing more. I even went to the doctor one time and was talking to this, like, you know, psychologist about what was, you know, why am I so sad? Why am I so depressed? And he put me on Adderall, right? And that's what everybody did, you know, in 2008, you know, hey, oh, if you can't get all the work you're trying to get done, take some Adderall. So I did that for like a year. And I realized, hold on a second, I just need to be doing less. It's not that I needed to, you know, I needed to delegate things. But by 2011, a huge commercial project took me for a little over 300 grand, and I had 18 guys at that point in time, and I had to sell all my trucks. I was down to five guys just to make payroll and cover bills, and I just said, I'm done. And I sold off my company to a big heating and air conditioning company in Northern Virginia, and my uncle had moved to Texas with his wife, and he grew up working for my dad's company and my granddad's company. So we were doing the same thing, just apart from one another. He said, come down to Dallas, take a breather, see what I'm doing. Maybe you'll like it. Maybe you want to relocate and try something different. I did, and saw the paychecks he was making selling air conditioners. And I was like, you got to be kidding. You're making what to sell air conditioners? So I came down here. The owner of that business gave me they're the biggest guys in town here in Dallas. And he made me a really nice offer, and I said, went back home, and my now wife said, yeah, let's do it. So I worked for them for 3 years, learned how to run a business the right way, learned a lot about, got inside. Man, we were running 800 calls a year. We were cranking, and we
that's with the big company.
The big company. Wait, I don't mind mentioning it. It's A-Number One Air here in Dallas. They're friends of mine. They're great people. The Greens, they own. They run an amazing business. They're doing like $80 million a year now. Back then, we were doing like 20 to $25 million. So we were like, I was like on a 12-man sales team, and we'd run around just meeting people, having great conversations, selling air conditioners. I'd go home, sleep like a baby. Bank account was full. Life was good. But something was missing, and that's when I talked to the owner of that company. Some management issues. I wasn't thrilled with the culture our sales manager was putting in place, and I let him know. I was like, hey, I'm getting out of here if some changes don't happen. He said, well, if you gotta go, we've remained friends, but Mike and I left and started Rescue Air January 1 of 2014.
Very cool. January 1, 2014.
We just turned six.
Nice. So you're actually not that much older than our company. So yeah. We actually started our company in Austin in the winter of 2013.
Oh, really?
And then my dad kind of ran on his own for the year of 2014. Mm-hmm. I kind of traveled back and forth from Arizona. And then I finally moved. In fact, just February 14th, so Valentine's Day, was 5 years.
Oh, cool.
So I've been here for 5 years. So, yeah, our companies are pretty close to the same in age. Very, man. Cool. But yeah. You guys are definitely making a lot more stride than what we're doing. And I have zero desire to have the biggest company in town.
Right.
But I feel like I've been in your shoes where you're just burned out. You want something different. And, that's what ended up causing me to relocate. I had another company in another state and relocated to Texas. So we share a very similar story,
that
right?
Is, yeah.
Multi-generational, moving from out of state, coming to Texas, great opportunity here. Yeah. But so you were talking to your uncle, you saw that there was a lot of money to be made. You made that move, you started to work in, you were making the money, and something was missing. You had to start your own company. So you started your own company. You're now 6 years old.
Right.
And what kind of moves are you guys making now?
Okay. So I'm making moves that I've learned so much from my successes, right? Okay. Some successes I've had. After we started Rescue Air, the first year we did $470,000, right? So, but we actually started building on the company in October of 13, and we opened the doors January 1 of 14. We didn't run our first call till April of 14.
Oh, wow.
It was all just building blocks. We wanted, I owned a rental property that I sold. So I came into this thing pretty well funded, had about $200,000 from that rental property. So that was enough for me. We didn't take a draw. Neither one of us took a paycheck the first 6 months we were in business. He had money piled up from just,
selling.
From selling air conditioners from all the years and just saving his money. So we weren't worried about getting out there and making a bunch of money right away as much as we were about, like, back then it was SEO and being branded. And, literally, I sat in my office. We had an office, Rescue Air, had an office, and I was in there day in and day out working on building the business, the groundwork for the business, all the way till April before we even ran our first call.
Wow.
It's pretty wild stuff.
Yeah, nobody does that, right?
No.
So it's like, I'm going to go start my own business. So you turn around, jump in your truck, and you go run a service call.
Yeah, go run a service call, right. So mine was all the other frame of mind. Let's get a business well-established, so that we can give great service, so that we can do right by our customers. So, and that's all.
So a lot of guys coming up in this industry, well, let's face it, right? It's not hard to get a mechanical or a contractor's license. So you're working for a guy, you get upset, you'd have a disagreement or whatever, you get pissed off, and then all of a sudden, I'm going to go start my own business.
That's every business.
F this guy,
that's
right?
Every single business. Our business is maybe the only one that did it the other way.
Right. And so with that, right, you got all these guys who are maybe fantastic installers, or
right.
or like super techs, right? They can fix anything. And what they lack is they lack that business skill, that business initiative to be able to successfully run a business, right? So you kind of have maybe a little bit of an upper leg because you did a little small stint in college for business, right? But you didn't finish.
Well, I went. Well, I did 3.5 years.
Okay, so you almost finished.
Yeah, I should probably go finish. It would probably make sense to have that on the wall. I paid for it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be hard to finish, right? Half semester or another semester. So, I mean, looking at all these guys out there who are they're struggling, right? Yeah. They are where you were at in Myrtle Beach, right? Mm-hmm. So what kind of advice would you give them, you know, with them just spinning their wheels, feeling like they're not moving anywhere, trying to give them a word of encouragement or some motivation?
My thoughts would be, okay, before you can go run your own business, I think you should at least be able to run someone else's. And this is just a basic thought that I've had. You know, if you're out here and you're service tech and you want to start your own thing, don't let that entrepreneurial spirit die, but don't think that just because you want it so bad that you can go make it happen. What I would recommend somebody to do is go work for another heating and air conditioning company and see if you can work your way to the top. Because if you can get yourself to the position of where you're running a heating and air conditioning company, right? That means, yeah, I mean, you got a lot of other stuff you got to think about. You got payroll, install service, call center. All of these departments have to be run properly. You have to be able to manage people. You've got to be a leader. That's an inherent quality that you're not going to build a good business if you are not a leader. And being a good service tech has nothing to do with leadership or payroll for that matter. So I would say if you go work for a company, even if it's a small company, and see if you can get really, really well-rounded about all the ins and outs of a business. If you can become the general manager of a small heating and air conditioning company and see all the ins and outs, you're probably at a spot where you could start considering opening your own company. But there's no point. And another thing I would say, anybody who starts a heating and air conditioning company or an electrical, plumber, roofer, I don't care what you are, I would personally recommend joining a leadership group as soon as you can. I think one of them, any of them, can do you real justice as long as it's one that's got good credentials.
You're talking about companies like Nexstar,
SGI. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
So I've been a member of several of those, and I felt like the organization fell stagnant over time, where you come in, you know, the first go around and you're like, man, this stuff's awesome, right? I'm learning all kinds of stuff. And then all of a sudden it's like next year, it's like, well, you're just teaching me the same thing over and over again. And the next year over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I think this is my time. I need to exit. Right.
There you go.
And so we got out of those, and then got into another one. Right. Yeah. And it was just kind of like a rebranded same thing. And
really?
It was like, well, this was disappointing.
Yeah.
You know, $20,000. Well, more than that, right?
But. Like SGI, I know that's that one in particular with A1 Air. That's where I learned about them. So I was working over there, and I said, okay, where did things turn for them? And it's when they implemented those processes. You know, they went from running a company that was doing, you know, I don't know, $8 or $10 million at the time. When they put that in place, they rocket fired straight up, just getting real good processes in place. I would say you don't necessarily have to join one of these groups. But I would have business coaches, and I'd have even people like myself. I get so many calls. People want to talk about how to run your company the right way. Constantly have these conversations. Have an open mind, and keep developing and working on yourself. I do a lot of books, a lot of reading. I'm ate up with one of my favorite books early on was Rework. I think that's such a fun book. It's like 36 chapters that are like a page and a half each. Goes everything from meetings to marketing, you know, and like
that's an easy book to finish.
It's an easy one to knock out. You do it on Audible, you can pump out 3 or 4 chapters in like 15 minutes. It's a 2.5-hour Audible book. Some of the stuff like that. Just make sure that you're following the rules. It's really not that complicated, but you know, like so one of the we're in Nexstar and we're in SGI, and like Nexstar has a video series on how to run a company at 2 million versus 4 versus, you know, 6, 10, and 15 and up. And these different steps that come along the way, don't try to, you know, there's glass ceilings you hit. Like 6, 7, 8 million bucks, you hit a glass ceiling. really getting the right leadership team in place. And when you're fully departmentalized, that's when you're going to have a dedicated service, sales, install, and general manager and call center manager. And you'll have these different managers that you have to manage. And you need to know when to take those steps and to make those things happen. Even basic ideas like, hey, every fifth or sixth person in your business, you're probably looking at another manager in your business, you know, just.
Yeah, so I've noticed that like that first wall that you, that first hurdle you have to jump over is like right at a million, yeah. Right? And then it's like, it seems like it takes forever. Like you hit that like 980 and then you finish off the year and you're like, dang it, man, I was so close, right? And it seems like that million is like a magic number. And then you jump over that $1 million wall, then the next hurdle is like 3 to 5 million, right? And it's just like you get so close, but there's always just like that. It's almost like a psychological game, mm-hmm. where you kind of put a barrier on yourself, right? You're just like, yeah. I just got to make it. As if that magical number achieves something magical for you, right? Yeah. But a lot of people think because, you know, you're a $5, $6, $7, $8, $10 million company that you're just printing money.
No, not at all.
That's not the case at all.
No, not at all. Not even close to the case. So when our first year we did 470,000. Our second year we did 1.71 million. So that was great growth, right? Now my uncle and I were business partners. So he was managing more of the sales side, although we both have a huge sales background. That doesn't hurt because, you know.
Nothing happens till something gets sold.
That's right. Yeah, money fixes most of your problems. But so I was managing installation and really the call center and the customer service side of it. The next year, we did 3.2 million. That year, we did 3.2 million. We were 24% net profit. And there was
That's amazing.
Yeah, there was like seven of us working at a $3.2 million company, 24% net. We were literally printing money. And then, you know, then the next year, we jump up to 4.5 million. Then you jump up to 6.5, and now we're, you know, 10.2 is this year. The stretch goal for this year's 12.4. So we're going to land somewhere between 10.2 and 12.4. You know, it's still beginning of February. We were a little behind goal in January, so I don't know.
You'll make up for it.
I think we'll be there. I think we're going to find ourselves around 11.
The summer's here pretty gnarly.
There'll be, yeah exactly. hey, you got to pray for some heat. Doesn't hurt.
That's it.
Yeah, but I tell you what, that sweet spot, things were easy. $3.2 million company was just a handful of us. Man, I miss those days. Yeah. 24% net.
So there's times I tell my dad when things start to get out of control, you know, I say, Dad, can't we just go back to the good old days? It was just me and you in a van.
That's
you know,
right.
We do like one or two installs a week. We're set, you know?
Yeah, that was good stuff.
But obviously you guys are seeing explosive growth, and that has to do a lot with your guys' leadership skills, being able to be mentored by other organizations or professional organizations. Mm-hmm. And those aren't free. I mean, they come at a cost.
For sure.
And so, you know, you got a lot of these guys out there who may be struggling. They go, look, I don't have any money to put into any professional training or coaching, right, or something like that. I mean, what kind of advice would you give them to say, hey, here's what your next move would be if you're really contemplating sticking this out, grinding it out, or maybe we should just throw in the towel and go work for somebody else?
Yeah, I don't give up. Don't ever give up, you know? And it, like, okay, so my company in Virginia, I needed a recharge. That company, I was so lost and so chaotic in my own head. I don't think there was an ability for me to change at that point in my life. I think I had to get rid of that company.
And you didn't have kids and a wife at that point, right?
No wife, no kids. I was more worried about my boat, you know. And I just didn't even want to do that business anymore. I wasn't treating my business with the respect it deserved because I was just sick and tired of it. I would say just develop yourself. Read the right books. Get yourself coaches and mentors. Listen to them. I'm really good at telling myself that I don't know what I'm doing. I have that. I try to wear that as a frame of mind that I don't know what I'm doing, and that as long as I keep telling myself I don't know what I'm doing, I look for the answers, and
or ask for help.
My business coach, man, I get on the phone with him. It's amazing. These people on the outside looking in, they see it. It's like that old mentality. If you're going to buy a business, think about all the things you do. Look at your business every day when you walk in the front door as if you just bought it. Somebody else walked in and bought your business. Would that person still be working for you? Would the office be arranged the way it is? Would the call center and all the people be in the same seats they're in? You know, would you immediately redo your service tickets?
Interesting.
If somebody else bought your business and they'd make a bunch of changes, go on and make those changes. Try to walk into your company every day thinking about
it. Look at it from a different perspective.
Yeah, like if I was coming to buy your company, what do you think the first four or five things I would do are? And you can probably name it yourself.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so go on and do that. Yeah, go on. go. That'd be some good advice.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Ben with HVAC Tactical. If you're looking for some gear to represent what you do so passionately for a living, then check us out at HVACtactical.com. That's HVACtactical.com. And be sure to hit us up on Instagram and tag us in all your photos. Back to the show.
Yeah, no doubt. We all have our flaws, right? We all end up sitting in our little comfortable zones, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like nothing ever good happens when you sit in your comfort zone. You have to step out of your comfort zone in order for the awesome things in life to start taking place.
Yeah.
And you just got to challenge yourself, right? Or surround yourself with people who challenge you and motivate you. And, you know, I was just telling my wife the other day, I said, you know, having lifelong friends is great, but if they're not motivating you to make you be a better person and make you level up, it's time to find some new friends.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We talk about culture here is one of the biggest, I mean, you should come to our team meeting. I wish you were here on Tuesday. So our Tuesday morning team meetings are all about culture. We'll talk about, okay, let's talk about, you know, being a professional. What is delivering five-star service? Or, you know, what is being a servant in general? And we just have these big, profound conversations as a giant team, and we'll have exercises and activities tied into it so that it'll turn into a, you know, I have a fun way of always surprising somebody at the end of it.
Interesting.
You know, you look here on this board right in front of us, it says something to strengthen our team, and you know, we wrapped up a meeting with that, and then on the other side we got a sign here: stop doing to help rescue air. You know, I'm not going to hold back, stop my complacency, I won't be closed-minded to change. These are just activities that we're working on, and you know, we talk it out and figure out, it's amazing how much of this stuff is transcendent from work to home,
sure,
to all aspects of life, being a good dad or just a good a good neighbor.
Well, you know, it's like let's just, for instance, if you were an alcoholic, right? The first step is admitting that you have a problem, right? Mm-hmm. So when it comes to running a business or being in this industry or really any trade or any business for that matter, recognizing that there's an issue and saying, hey, I need to change. And then, yes. And you know, there's an old saying, right? Knowledge is power, right? Mm-hmm. I don't agree with that. I think that what you do with the knowledge is the actual power, because you can know and not do. And quite frankly, you're better off not knowing,
yeah,
right? So I feel like you have to be open to the change. You have to be willing to change in order for those things to start taking place. And, it sounds like that's kind of the move you made in your life. You were ready for something else and needed that, yeah, recharge and getting back to the basics, so to speak.
Yeah. I remember when I went to work for James Green at A No. 1 Air, and this is such a simple statement. It's still the biggest comment, biggest, piece of advice anybody's ever had to me. I remember, you know, I was having a rough go at something there with that sales manager. And he's like, bud, you got to learn to embrace change. And I was like, yeah, I've heard that 100 times. But the way he said it to me in that moment when he said it to me, this is after, you know, I'd sold out and essentially ran my own company out of business because I was doing jobs that were too big. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, man, you know, that time I heard him, because it was like, okay, all that other stuff's behind me. Why am I still hearing comments like that? You need to embrace change. When he told it to me that time, it really opened my eyes and I started thinking a little bit differently. But being able to embrace change it's the hardest thing in the world. That's where change is in the uncomfortable.
We're creatures of habit, right? Yeah. So we get into our little ways and we don't want to change, but I feel like, again, you know, when you get out of that comfort zone, that's when everything starts happening and everything starts open up. Opportunities begin to open up.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me living in Arizona, that was my comfort zone, right? But when I got rid of my company, I said, well, I don't have nothing holding me here anymore. And so we moved, and that was scary for us. You know, yeah. I didn't have a job. I mean, we were starting a brand new company in another state. You know what I mean?
Did you have kids?
I did.
Oof.
Yeah, man. So, and one on the way. So,
oh, no.
Yeah, man. So, you know, it's one of those things. You know, my wife, I uprooted her from her life and her family and everything, yeah, else. And But looking back now, you ask her, she'll tell you moving to Texas was the best thing we ever did.
And my wife will tell you the exact same thing. Yeah.
Sounds like so, we need to spend some time together.
Well, when I closed down my company and I sold it off in Virginia, I made her, I told her I was, can we move to Texas? What do you think? She's like, yes, we need a change. We need a life change. She's like, just swear to me you'll never start another heating and air conditioning company. And I went to work for A1 Air, and 3 years later, I told her, I was like, hey, I think I want to start another company again. She's like, yeah, you're not the same guy you were back then.
So she understood.
She's like, yeah, I completely support that. And if you talk to her right now, she'll tell you the same thing. She's like, you're a completely different person than you were when we were in Virginia. And best thing that ever happened to us was moving to Texas and getting a fresh start.
Yeah. It's just interesting to see when once you're in the trade, you never truly leave the trade.
You know? It's got a way of keeping you, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. Especially when you come from a generational curse of being in the trade, right?
You get all these licenses and stuff, and you're like, I can't do anything else. Yeah. This is all I got.
So Rescue Air is growing, right? And it's growing at a pretty rapid rate. You guys are making some moves, and you know, obviously hearing other people talk about you is, you know, is a good thing, right? Yeah. But you also get a lot of haters that come, you know, jumping on board with that too.
Like,
oh, look at them, you know. But what would you attribute that growth to? What have you done? What's a secret sauce? And I'm not saying like give all your secrets away, right? To all your competition.
It's funny. Everybody wants to claim they're a big chunk of it. I'm not going to say it's software or any of this stuff. I would say the biggest thing that's happened here is we've kept a focus on, there's reasons we started this company. I didn't like the culture of our sales team at A1 Air. And I said I didn't want people to work in an environment like that anymore. And that's a great company, and they've got a great culture too. But just at that point in time when I was on that sales team, I really didn't like the way it felt. And they were losing people because of it. I watched a lot of talented people walk out the door there in a very short period of time. And I look back and I saw that happen. It didn't have to happen. And when I started Rescue Air, I committed that we're going to do a couple of things that we are going to give amazing service to customers, right? But we're going to have a great culture. We have a place that's nurturing where people can come, grow, and develop, that's a happy place to work. I'm not going to have a business like the one I'd had before where I wasn't happy. So whatever we got to do, that's being happy, a happy, positive, growing culture. And then for me, I'd grown so much in their system. I saw all these right ways to run a business after I ran my business all these other ways. That's what gave me some wind back in my sails anyway. Right. A lot of that was SGI tactics and then, processes and procedures. So when I started the company, I said, okay, we're going to be process-driven. We're going to develop this thing the right way. We're not the first ones to take on this challenge of growing a company, and there is a rule book for the right way to do it. Granted, some of these rules are, there's more than one way to skin a cat, but there's a proven way to do it also. So we're just going to follow the rules. And one of those rules that I quickly discovered for me, the biggest thing I've ever done is just training the hell out of myself. Training myself over and, I mean, books, seminars, expositions, I don't care who it is, where it is. If it's motivational and it's about me being a better leader and taking good skills back to my team, I'm doing it. So I just got to keep recharging those batteries over and over. Even stuff like this. This really helps me think about what's important and gives me a little bit of clarity on a cloudy day in my office, you know, where I'm not focused. I can do this and I can talk my way through it and I can go. So it's keeping my head on straight. But
very good.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give someone who is maybe thinking of starting their own company? And, you know, we talked about maybe venturing them into a leadership role in a company. So let's say maybe they're a GM of a company.
Right.
You know, obviously you started with some capital, which is always a great thing to be able to have. But let's face it, a lot of these guys out here start with like a couple $1,000s.
Yeah. Don't do that. I wouldn't do it. I don't know. I'd find somebody to help me fund it. I'd come up with a plan that we're, you know, but you got to make sure you use your funding wisely. So you've got to have a plan. I mean, it all comes down to having a plan. If you're starting your own company, you have to be a leader. You are not going to be able to develop people in your business if you don't have good leadership skills. So read leadership books. I mean, I love John Maxwell. I love Jim Collins. I mean, his stuff's fantastic. Just understand what takes a like good to great. Jim Collins' book, Rework. It's a great book. Any and everything Jim Collins, John Maxwell. That stuff works for me. And I listen to it on Audible. If I'm in my vehicle, that's what's playing. I'm just keeping my head on straight about, you know, what being a good leader looks like and what a good business looks like.
So I'm in the middle of a book right now called Traction.
Yeah. That's, I tried to read that book like 5 years ago. It went right over my head. It was way too hard, intense for me.
Yeah, so I obviously am not reading it. I'm on an Audible. I can't sit down and read. My brain doesn't work that way.
Yeah, that's right.
So I have to do it while I'm driving. And, you know, a lot of guys were like, oh, man, I use that time for jamming out on the radio. Well, you'll be stuck where you're at right now.
You're digging Traction, right?
I am. Yeah, we're going to implement a lot of stuff out of that.
It's perfect for your size, too, I think. And you've got to get to a certain size before I think Traction makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so we're excited to see what it holds. But I was listening. I got about halfway through the book, and I turned around, and I ordered two copies of it on Amazon. I gave one to my dad and one to my office manager.
Nice.
We all need to get on this book together, so... Yeah. Yeah, so we're excited to see what happens.
There's a lot of these books out here. We can do this for hours.
Oh, man. Well, they say, you know, the average person reads like 2 books a year, right? But the average CEO reads 52 books per year.
52. Gosh. All right. Yeah, so I'm probably, I track for around 10, maybe 12. Yeah, 12, I would say, one a month.
Still above average, right? So, but you know, what it does is you're opening your mind to learning something new, right? And it's like, even as a service technician, I always say that if you're open to being corrected and open to ask questions and to be humble enough to do that, you will be great, right? It's the danger part where you're 10 years into the trade and you think you're bulletproof and you think you know everything. And it's a very dangerous place to be.
Yeah.
You know, where somebody comes by and goes, hey, man, that's not the way it's supposed to be done.
Right.
Well, I've always done it this way. Yeah. But if you've been doing it wrong, it's still wrong, dude. Yeah. So
you can get so set in stone in your way. That was me in my old company. You couldn't have convinced me to change nothing. No how, no way. You were the man. Yeah.
But I remember when I was 17, my grandfather, I'd be working with my grandfather. You know, my grandfather was a tin bender by trade. So working in a sheet metal shop and stuff, well, we'd go to these job sites and my grandfather, people would run into him. And my grandfather's pretty well known in this industry in Southern Arizona. And so, they'd be like, hey, you know, how you doing? And he'd be like, oh, hey, this is my grandson. His name is Ben. He goes, but don't bother telling him anything. He's 17. He knows everything, you know? Yeah, and he would introduce me that way. And I was like, Grandpa, what the heck? You know, I was so embarrassed, you know? But and even then he was saying it to me and it wasn't registering with me, right? Until I got older. And it wasn't until I was probably in my early 20s when I thought, man, if I'm going to stick around in this trade, I should probably go back and learn a few things. And I quickly realized a lot of the stuff that I knew was wrong. And it's sad that we find that a lot of people in this industry who claim to be professionals and experts are not professionals and experts. Yeah. They've closed down. They feel like they've learned everything they need to know. And reality is you never get to a point in this business where you truly know everything there is to know. Like every day is a learning experience.
So look at us at our age, right? I started this company January 1 of 2014, right? So I was 34 years old. And I had literally 11 years of experience owning businesses when I started this business already. It's funny when I think about it, you know, you get a lot of these young technicians and they're just, you know, spitfire. They got to get out there and do it. And I'm like, there's not much patience in the world these days. Slow it down. Work your way through some other companies. And when you do it, you can take your time. You can go start a company when you're 35, right? Maybe you work for somebody from the age of 21 to 35. You get 14 years of good experience. Try to get well-rounded. Work your way into a service manager. See if you even like managing people. You might start your own company and find out you don't like managing people. Well, now you're not going to – well, then you're a company of one. You know, you can't – you have to – you've got to get good at others. There's others – maybe you don't like accounting. Listen, I don't care. If you're out there listening – and you don't like accounting, suck it up, Buttercup, because you're going to have to learn accounting if you ever want to be any good at it. You're going to have to look at your own P&L and your own balance sheet and your own cash flow report. And it's not fun, but it's only fun because it's embracing that change. It's something, you know, technicians probably aren't wired the same way as accountants.
But then you get these big guys, right? These big, powerful CEO guys, and like, well, I don't know anything about doing the books, but I'll just hire people who know how to do the books. Yeah. Right. And I guess if you got the money to do that,
maybe,
but then you got to worry about people ripping you off. Right.
I think you'd be surprised. I bet most of those guys know a little more about the books than they say they do.
Yeah. It's very possible.
Yeah. I think
pretty possible.
I think it's super important. You just take some basic classes on that stuff. We're getting ready to take, I'm not even kidding, I'm taking eight people, my eight management staff, my management team. We're going to do our accounting firm is hosting us a 4-hour QuickBooks class specifically on how to use QuickBooks for our business, right? And we still use QuickBooks. What's interesting about it is I want all of my managers to be able to look at the reports we look at. I'm going to get them their own logins, you know, with their own permissions that's guarded in the right ways. And they, every one of my managers is getting ready to take accounting training. I mean, you should see my install manager, right? You know, that guy, you know, he can't use Google Calendar and he's got to learn QuickBooks. But I mean, they're open and they're embracing these ideas because we all just got to keep growing.
Yeah.
Listen, my company's growing fast. And I tell everybody at this manager's meeting this morning, and I say it to everybody on the team. Rescue Air is growing 25-30%. We might double in size next year. You know, if you double, right? We're not going to double in size next year. But if a company doubles in size, did you get twice as good?
Yeah, you have to grow with the company.
How fast are you growing? My company's growing really fast, and it will outgrow anybody here who's not growing fast.
So it's something that I actually learned not that long ago, and actually Traction talks about this, that as your company grows, you'll find a lot of people who were there with you from the very beginning will end up leaving the company either by choice or by force because they have failed to grow with the company.
That's right.
As your company grows, your company evolves, right? And those same people have to evolve with the business. You can't keep doing the same old rinky-dink stuff when you start to grow, you know, multi-million dollars in business.
That's right.
You got to be smart about it. And you got to grow strategically, and you got to surround yourself with the right people.
The management and the ownership, not excluded from that. You think about that, an owner, you can only grow your business as fast as you're growing yourself. So the business will outgrow an owner just as fast as it outgrows anybody else.
Yeah, totally, man. So we'll wrap up here. If someone were to walk away from this podcast or this YouTube video, because we're recording on YouTube, if they could walk away from this with one nugget of advice from you,
yeah,
what would that be?
I'd just say keep developing yourself. Spend as much time as you can developing yourself. If you want to be a business owner and you got to keep growing in life. You're not helping anybody else grow if you're not growing. So just keep working on developing yourself.
And that goes hand in hand with the whole mentality of the brand, HVAC Tactical, the brand, where, you know, it truly is a mindset. And it's, you know, whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you are 100% correct.
That's right.
So you control your future. You control who you want to be. And either you can settle for mediocrity and being average, mm-hmm. or you can choose to be the best at what you do and excel and create a better life for you and your family and enjoy what life has to offer and stop the struggling. So, mm-hmm. Well, hey, listen, Josh, I appreciate you being on with us, man.
So fun.
I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to be with us. And so for all you guys listening, this is Josh Campbell, Rescue Air Heating and Cooling out of Richardson, Texas. Be sure to check him out on Facebook, on Instagram, YouTube.
Our YouTube videos are fantastic. Okay. We've got some really cool YouTube videos. We got one called the Rescue Air Difference video where we remove a newly installed heating and air system and swap it out with a Rescue Air heating and air install. You want to see what a perfect install looks like? Look at one of ours one time.
I'm all about it, man.
Go check out our, yeah, we pursue perfection around here.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, but check out our YouTube channel. Just search for Rescue Air, and you'll like the videos for sure.
Cool. Well, there you guys have it. Thanks for checking us out, HVAC Tactical Podcast. We'll see you guys soon. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for supporting the brand. Remember, being tactical is a mindset, so make the decision to be the best. We'll see you guys next time.